This 1UP podcast is brought to you by G4, your way to get inside the year's biggest gaming event. G4 will be on the convention floor live every day with exclusive hands-on demos of over 30 of the biggest new gaming titles. E3-08 Live, week-long coverage, July 14th through the 18th, only on G4. Visit g4tv.com/E3 for details.
Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. We're podcasting here live from, not live. Well, it's live to us. We're here now. So it's live to us here at E3 in Los Angeles.
That's what we used to call live with an asterisk.
Really?
On my old podcast.
Live plus.
But look what came of that.
I know. Sorry I brought it up.
So we got some of the usual. We don't have a usual cast anymore. Let's not mince words. Let's not kid ourselves.
And this is your return from your vacation.
Sean Molly's gone. Yeah, and I'm back after many weeks away. Hi, everybody. I'm back.
Hi.
Hi. It's hard to come back. It's hard to come back. Hi, Jen. We have Jen Tsao here on the mic.
This is Sean Elliott, fresh off of flight on Virgin Air.
We're going to talk about how great it is to be on Virgin.
Did Ryan, you not introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Ryan.
Okay.
Ryan, the one fool in the room who was not on Virgin Air.
So Virgin Air, if you've been flying like U.S.-owned airlines, that's like you're just traveling in time to like 1975.
Yeah, that's so
you
last century.
Into the future, and it's basically where flying is playing Doom at a rave.
Yeah. Yes, we have been to the future, and we like it there. Yeah, you weren't kidding. They have Doom on the. You know, they have every seat back has a monitor on it, and there's games. Well, there's all sorts of shit on
and
this
they
monitor.
Don't charge you $6
and one of them
an
is games, and they've got Doom on there.
Like Doom 1?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the remote, at first you're thinking like, okay, there's going to be some cheesy remote. You know, like when you've been to a hotel or
right,
something?
Right, right.
And they've got an N64 controller.
Right.
And you're playing games for some other non-N64 system.
Right.
Super Nintendo or something. But there's this fully developed.
That controller's like the best thing ever. It's like a controller on one side and a remote control on the. I swear that was like the best hour of my life on that.
And the controller.
I can agree. I was sitting next to Jeff. He was so excited. To
I know.
Doom.
Everybody else on the plane just sitting there trying to get through the hour, and I'm like going, "Oh my god!"
Jeff was even
was
playing the word search game.
Nice.
But that pissed you off.
The word search game pissed me off because. It's one of those games where, like, a whole bunch of letters come on, and then you have to make as many words as you can in a certain amount of minutes. And, hi, T-R-A-M, tram, that's not a word?
Apparently not.
Yeah, according not to Virgin fucking Airlines.
I wonder if they screen that thing.
Oh, wait, I like them.
You know, just like in flight movies, they're not going to show you any movies that have, like, you know, airline crashes and stuff. Like,
yeah.
If you're playing the word thing, and then, like, you come up with, like, crash or, like,
tragedy.
Wreck.
Terrorist. Yeah. Oh, my God, that would be so awesome. Because you could kind of watch other people play. I was watching the person play in the row in front of me, and she was so dumb. She, like, wasn't getting any of the words. I mean, and it was
I was watching Tina, our community manager, play, and she got hoisted. And
that's good.
I was impressed.
That's like
hoisted.
Sounds like my
good.
Experience today watching other people play games.
Yeah.
Like, before we jump out of the airline, there's more to say. Actually,
there is.
The rave part comes from the fact that the interior of the plane, you can tell this to Ryan, since you guys know already, is all, like, 2001 style... just like aesthetic to it, all just rounded plastic and whatnot.
Yeah, the seats are like white rounded plastic.
And they have mood lighting
in
the plane. And if you're taking an evening flight, in our case, it was all just like a deep, dark purple. And they're playing techno music.
Oh, it was that way first at 8:45 in the morning.
But they do
too.
Change the tint.
Yes.
They do change the color tint, I've heard. Well, that's what I've heard.
And even like the in-flight safety, instead of having someone stand up there and try to get you to pay attention for the 6,000th time about how to put a life jacket on, they have just this, like, animated, this slickly animated thing that plays on the screen in your TV.
But what I loved about Virgin this time and the last time I flew it is the people who work on the plane are actually really nice.
Yeah, they were
and
really nice.
I flew it was the first time I flew with my son, so I had, like, a car seat and a little baby, and I was by myself. And they assigned me a flight attendant to stand in line while we were getting on the plane to hold
no
car
way.
Seat. Way.
See, this is the best place ever. Like, I love them.
Yeah,
shit, we're Virgin Air Radio.
Yeah, this podcast sponsored by. Yeah. Yeah, it was just a fantastic. Like, I never want to fly anywhere else now. If any other airline. I'm just going to be going, oh, man, if I was on Virgin now, I'd be, like,
so
looking at the screen.
You're
going
to fly only places that they fly.
You'd be playing Doom, which you wouldn't even think to play if, like, someone gave it to you for your DS.
I only played Doom for, like, 10 minutes. It was just the novelty that I could do it. Then I did get on the word game until I got pissed off that not only was tram not a word, but con wasn't a word, C-O-N.
Even small things like, you know.
I'm still mad.
Your map, you can bring up a digital map and, you know, zoom in when you want.
Oh, yeah.
Look around.
Like, yeah, you could do that. You can chat with your neighbors, too. Did you know that?
Yes, you can. That could be a bad thing, though.
Yeah, you could look at look at that fat
get your arm off the rest, motherfucker.
Yeah, right. Right, I'm in the middle seat. I get most armrests, ass. So, I don't know. That was great.
Yeah. So
made me happy.
To bring it into E3 and games, you're saying, like, I mean, we all know the experience. It's hard to watch someone else play a game. But in this case, for me, I just got done watching Mirror's Edge, and it was weird because, I mean, as you know, in the demonstration videos, everyone's moving really fluidly, running from one jump to another. Sorry, right. You hear every noise in here. So everyone's like running from one, you know, running from one platform to another, and it's super fluid. It looks like free running or parkour, you know, and it's all about that kind of acrobatics. But then when people were playing it, they would be super timid, and they'd walk up to a ledge, and they'd look down, and they'd think about, are they going to jump and grab the rope that's glowing, telling them to jump and grab it.
Yeah.
And then they would miss a jump, and they'd back up and do this. And I can imagine it was really difficult for the people demonstrating it to watch because it's the opposite of what they want. And they know that the challenge for this kind of game is that it's like first person, and a lot of people in mass... Sorry, I keep getting distracted. A lot of people in the mass market have a hard time with, you know, not motion simulation sickness and things like that, but vertigo, but just like dealing with challenges in that point of view.
That's going to be the big challenge on that game.
Well, what I don't understand about that game, and I know everybody's all about it, you know, it was like...
I liked it. It
got this huge applause, and people were like titillated. But it's about parkour, which is something you see and looks really cool from a third-person perspective. And when you have it in first person, it's like, yeah, you're experiencing it, and you're making the choices, but you don't get to see the cool moves. And I feel like, given the setting of the game, it's not Prince of Persia. You know, I mean, everybody wants to say, well, that was Prince of Persia, but it wasn't. You know, I mean, Prince of Persia was so different. I'd like to see a third-person parkour
game.
That's
funny. I really like the first person. I was bringing it up, like, not because I think it's bad. I think it's fantastic, but I just imagine that they had a difficult fight with EA. I mean, this is speculation. They probably didn't, but it seems like they would. To convince them?
No, I bet they did.
Like, no, this is not. This is going to be first person because we want to be able to communicate the vertigo and just the disorientation, what it's like to roll, to come out of a run and roll, and to just keep moving. But because there have to be people saying that that's not like safe. There are limits to what you're going to be able to do. And I was granted the demonstration they have there is so straightforward. And
yes,
I mean,
is.
I was able to navigate
kind of like a straight
so
line.
Easily after a single viewing of theirs. Yeah. And yet these other people would do it. I'm not saying I'm better than them or anything.
No.
I mean, well, clearly in this case at that game I was for that demo. But the point was, it's like, oh no, please be better than this because I don't want this to happen.
Yeah, I watched it. The guy I was getting the demo with, it was another journalist. I don't know who he was, some foreigner. And
we'll call him Schmo for the purposes of this conversation.
Yeah, although his real name, no, I won't say. I didn't see it, actually. But anyway, you know, the guy did the demo for us, the guy from DICE, and then he turned it over. He was handing the control over, and I didn't want to do it because it is distracting in here. You're right, Sean. It's hard to talk.
You
got a lot of background.
Just stare at me or something.
You
got to
go.
I was trying to
get past the noise.
Look into my eyes. Look,
when you start hearing specific
things. Go into the light.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Shut up! Okay. Anyway. Okay, so... they got louder.
All right, let's go.
All right, okay. So, I didn't want to take the controller because I thought... I didn't want to suck in front of that guy, and the game does look intimidating. It does. Like, I was just thinking, I want to play this on my own when no one's looking. So I'm going to let this other guy play because he's probably going to be a good gamer as opposed to me. Mm-hmm. And this guy was so bad, like it was unbelievable to me. But what you said about it must how it must be hard for the guys demoing to watch people playing badly. Like, I totally was watching that happen throughout the whole thing. And the guy was trying to be polite, and he's like the host, and he's representing the game, and he doesn't want to get bad press,
like,
or whatever.
This is the first jump in the game.
Yeah, and he's being very patient. He's like, okay, see, well, what you really wanted to hit F2 like I told you. You know?
Yeah.
That, no. Again, you have to hit F2. You know, he kept sort of repeating, like, oh, see, well, you know, you need to complete the jump or you're going to die. So, you know, he had to keep telling the guy. I mean, it was painful.
That this is the case because wow. When I was playing it. Think about how technical platforming, 3D platforming was in, like, anything from Half-Life 1 to, like, remember the Turok that came out for N64?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't even have two analog sticks in the platforming, and there was more difficult than anything I've seen in Mirror's Edge. Mm-hmm. But it's like the expanding market that's making the difference. You know, mm-hmm. We're aware when we see this that someone, that our cousin or someone's not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I guess I'm surprised that a game journalist wouldn't be able to pick it up, though. I mean, is it psychological that they don't think they're making the same kind of jumps as
well,
they would be making in another
what
game?
I watched this guy do was exactly what Sean was saying. It's like, you know, there would be a ramp, you know, and to... It just makes common sense. You need to run off the ramp to make the jump, you know? And this guy would, like, walk timidly up to the edge of the ramp and then just hit forward.
That seems
like,
clear.
Okay, well, that's going to be a falls to your death, moron.
But what I want them to do in this game, this is my request, is I want them to be able to, as in, like, skate, you should be able to take movies of your character.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, to not get, like, the money shot of you doing the cool thing, you know? I see both perspectives because they were being very adamant. I mentioned this in my little brief appearance on one of yours was that the first question I asked the guy was like, would you ever under any circumstance think about backing this camera up 1 or 2 feet so we could like see our feet? Because that's going to be a problem for a lot of people.
You can by looking down.
Yeah, but.
You see a lot of the shoes. And they're cool shoes.
It looked to me like it was just the very tip of the shoe. I don't know.
If you look all the way down, you can see. But then, I mean...
But it didn't seem like in motion except when she was sliding mm-hmm. under something.
But
it, really
what
see.
You would do, like, say, especially with the mouse, if you're playing on PC and you have a high DPI setting, it would be fairly easy to run toward a ledge, snap your mouse down, and see your feet the moment before you hit the edge and decide now is when I'm going to jump.
Yeah.
Just as quickly rotate your viewpoint back in front of you.
That's more work than say if they just pulled the camera back all the way so you could see the whole body. But anyway,
I don't admire him. I mean,
but his answer to that was like, no, we'll never do that. Yeah. We don't care if people complain. This is the game we're making.
Right.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it's good they're doing that. Yeah. A few things when I first started playing, I really wanted to see because the initial demo level is absolutely linear.
It's basically like a straight line.
I wanted to see if there were circumstances where they're using the level design to prevent you from going. I mean, where they're naturally just using the level design to prevent you from accessing things and that they're not just doing the equivalent of invisible walls and stuff like that.
What he did say that I thought was interesting was that even though that was just a straight line, he was saying that there's actually multiple paths down that line and that you're going to want to replay it because later in the game you're going to figure out how to do things way differently. And so you're going to go this one way right now because that's just what your brain is going to tell you to do. But that later on, you're going to realize there were maybe like 3 or 4 ways down this exact same
path. That they're designing. Yeah, they're like designing 4 speed runs in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, like there was one that was demonstrated and that was like by doing a series of wall runs to climb to a roof much quicker than you could just by scaling the side of the wall. But the difference there is in, say, if the environment was wider than that and through experimentation you could find things that maybe they hadn't anticipated. I mean, that's not the game they're making. That's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole thing seems to be about just getting through this environment as fast as you can. And normally in games of this sort, what's happening is that you feel pulled forward. There's always something you're trying to get. In this case, the game is pushing you forward because you're running from it. You know, there's going to be things chasing you and stuff. And because in the level that we play, there's really nothing going on. But in other circumstances, you're going to have helicopters and soldiers and stuff after you. You're not going to be stopping to think, like, well, wouldn't it be so much cooler if I could actually get up here? You're just going to keep going. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of levels that serve as an example for that. You know, in Darkness Eye of Might and Magic, the second level has a whole stage that's basically you know, running full speed to get somewhere and doing some platforming things. There's some like that in Half-Life 2.
Right. What?
Nothing. Nothing.
The noise?
No, I'm just I'm thinking about how you said I was a procrastinator and suddenly feeling guilty.
The story there is that Sean and Ryan and I were, you know, we wanted another voice on the podcast this week. And so right next door to where we're podcasting, basically the whole 1UP crew is over there writing their stories for posting for your reading pleasure. And I said, so who wants to be on the podcast on GFW Radio? And Jen, like, bolted up and Ken came in, and I was like, you just did that because you have stuff to write. You're totally procrastinating.
Pretty much. Yep. Maybe the room will get locked up when we're done.
That'd be awesome.
Except I'm the one to whom I have to make the excuses for not doing my work. So
it'd just be you and your conscience.
It's a bad infinite loop.
So Ken, let's back up on E3 just in general here.
I want to say a few more things about Mirror's Edge if we can.
Yeah, yes, you can.
I mean, thematically, I think there's a lot they can do with it. The whole notion is that this is, it's instead of like a Big Brother environment, I mean, they're calling it like, you know, like a nanny dystopian. And so the observation's still there. It's just, it's not so just dastardly. I mean, it's not quite the same degree of like control. Mm-hmm. But so you see there's like surveillance cameras throughout the level, and there's a news helicopter trying to watch you, and you're basically the only means of non-observed communication, basically a courier mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. And if they did, I guess like the way I try to get it from them is if asking them if they think that it's a story that people will talk about afterward, which is kind of like, I mean, if you had asked that about Portal before you'd played it, you would right. probably been surprised if they confidently said, yeah, we hope so.
Right.
So I'm curious to see what they do with that element of it. And the other thing I just wanted to point out that was interesting, I don't know if they showed you, but the level that is sort of in the underground, and it's based on the enormous Tokyo underground.
Oh, they did show that, the Tokyo sewers.
Yeah. That looks really cool down
that
there.
That looked very cool, yeah.
Just drawing, I think for some of the environments, just drawing from places as disparate as like Tokyo's insane underground to, I mean, some parts of it reminded me of like Vancouver in British Columbia. I mean, just a different sort of uh-huh. setting for a game.
And that sewer level too was like, I thought that the opening level was kind of vertigo inducing. Holy crap, the second level was just like, was like scary.
Yeah, because it's a cathedral ceilings underground.
Yeah, with just, you know, incredibly horrific drops.
Yeah,
you know, so
okay, so I got it out of my system. What about E3?
Well, I just wanted to it's our first day here. And I just, you know, and this is a whole different scene here at E3, and I don't know if 1UP here has talked about it, but I just thought it might be interesting just to go into what's going on at this show, which is like, this is the second year in a row that it's kind of in this like shadow of its former self thing, but we're back in the original setting that we've been at for forever. And earlier today when I was sitting in a demo that was boring the shit out of me, I just started spacing out on E3 in general, and I realized this is my 11th E3 in a row, which is a lot. And this one is probably the weirdest one just because we're in the original setting as it's been in every year, except with like, what, a tenth of the people?
It's like, it makes me sad. I never thought that I would be somebody who was like, oh, this year or that year was the glory days. But yeah. like, a lot of other years could qualify as the glory days, and this year is kind of, it makes me sad.
Yeah, I mean,
there are no banners.
I hear this from a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying this.
I disagree, but go
ahead. I mean, I know you disagree, but you know, first thing you said to me was, I like it, but I feel, I took a picture outside and there were like three people in my picture, you know,
fucking rad.
I'm like, there are no
Cormac McCarthy presents.
I just
E3.
feel like,
the road to E3,
you know,
the road to E3.
It's a sign of the times, you know, it's like bad economy, recession.
But,
I know,
but it's not really, it's just the way they decided to, it's just who they decided to invite and not invite.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, in fact, a place could be teeming if they had just let it.
And,
you know?
And the fact that, like, well, for one, like, the whole thing, I like it more because in the past, today, I spent, like, what I feel is, like, more meaningful time with X number of games that might have taken me 2 days in the past E3 in this center. And instead of walking in and having there be like a line of 10 people with inflatable surfboards on their backs and like,
even gotten there yet. I have been out and about all day in like demos and press conferences. Yeah. So maybe that's the difference.
When you go to each of the rooms to play a game, it's like they sit you down. If it's playable, you get to play it. You don't like... it's just not like the annoying circus it was before. And while, like, yes, it was really impressive to the world, and it kind of, like, I think the inadequacy people feel is that, like, this is, you know, the previous E3s were like, you know, gaming's coming out party to the world.
Yes.
It's like, look at us, we're big, we have the same money as you, if not more, we can do this. And now it's like, they're still spending the money. They're still flying people to Morocco, to all these different places for these events. Uh-huh. Morocco was for a Guild Wars thing some time ago, but they're having these pre-E3 events, but they're doubling up on the coverage because it's like, well, EA in particular, they had two pre-E3 events, so they get to coverage of each of these games prior to the show, and then we come to the show, and then they get even more coverage. And so for less money on their part, they're getting more exposure mm-hmm. and more awareness.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the middle of both of you. I mean, I see both sides. I mean, definitely this whole thing here has, like, the feel of, like, a chiropractor's convention, you know? It's like, you know, 40 guys walking around. But, and so that made me miss, like, and definitely in the past, I've been one of those guys who's just like, oh, God, there's so many fucking people here. I can't even move. I can't get from here at Sierra Online to, I'm going to name two companies that don't exist anymore. I can't get from A
Encore.
To...
Encore.
I can't get from A to B without, like, you know, 12 fat guys bumping me, and I'm like 10 minutes late for the appointment because of all the
people
in my way.
But it's not that they're just bumping you. It's because they're taking pictures of themselves with booth babes and stuff.
Right, all that stuff. And so that part, it annoyed me at the time, but there is something about, like, the spectacle and, like, what you said, the sort of feeling of, like, we're a big deal. This show's a big deal. That's totally gone here now. And you can't help, even if you know that's shallow, you can't help but sort of feel like, I don't know. Here we are at the loser convention.
I guess I just feel like it. You know, what is the point of E3? And I know it had multiple purposes, but I feel like our point is to see all these different games in one place at the same time.
Yes,
you know?
And for that, this is better.
Like, yeah,
like Sean said,
this is definitely better. At the same time, I wonder, is there any? Even any need for that, because we can have access to games
I don't think,
quite
yeah.
easily, you know. So,
well, this has been the
it's
point for
like
years.
This has been in addition to the jobs we already do, and yeah. So I sort of wonder, like, well, then for the other people, the sales and marketing people and retailers, you know, and fans, you know, for consumers, for them, is it serving their purposes? That it doesn't seem like it, because there is no, like, grandiose spectacle. Yeah. Though the press conferences, you know, seem to be exactly on par with previous years, except there were no hideous lines to get in, and
right.
that was nice. So
right.
I'm all for that.
So were they easy to get in, all of them?
I mean, I only went to Nintendo and Sony today, but you know how you used to go to the check-in booths, and there would mm-hmm. be like 50 people, you know, swarmed around from. Like,
oh God, was that like 2 years ago? Microsoft.
Yeah,
that
like
was like
that.
The last day of Saigon. I'm trying to get into that goddamn thing. It's like the most chaotic.
Here it's just like you saunter up.
Why,
to...
Why did the fall of Saigon particularly come to mind?
I don't know. I just remember, like,
you could at least have, like, Left 4 Dead or something.
There were people like screaming and crying.
Yeah.
Maybe that wasn't the best.
I agree with the whole thing. I was thinking before I even got here, I was thinking about how pointless it is, and I don't want this to be a bad example. I mean, I tend to do this and get in trouble because I take on our own stuff, but I was looking at our site, and I was looking how, you know, we were live blogging the Microsoft press conference, and from a consumer's point of view, I was like, well, I can go watch this press conference right now, and I was like, well, what are we going to get from this kind of rapid fire coverage, right? I mean, because, like, I think that, yeah, like imagine if we were able to editorialize, if you had the time to think and react to the press conference in a normal way, then we could provide analysis and opinion
yeah.
to it, and it would matter. But if we're just like, as fast as you possibly can, where you literally cannot keep pace with the events, so you're basically doing a shorthand of factoids with a little bit of humor mm-hmm. when you're able to put it in, I was wondering, like, what values that serve? And likewise, when you take an amplified to the entire show here, where we get these very quick impressions of these games, and then we have to go tonight, like, as soon as we're done taping this, it's like we need to go and write all these things as fast as we can. Then it's all going out at the same time. There's just this giant shotgun blast of, like, coverage where we don't have time to really, you know, work things out and think them through, and then everything is just there all at once. I mean, how do you, like, what are you going to be clicking on? I'm curious for our audience. It's like, oh, just because you heard of this game, or, I mean, Is it a chance for, as opposed to, like, say, if it was just more of a measured and well-paced type of coverage where you're able to spend time with it and find, you know, what is the angle for this? Maybe this isn't the game that everyone's looking forward to, and maybe there's an interesting story to tell here. It's definitely not going to be told in this context of this environment, right?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point. I mean, it would be, like, instead of live blogging a conference, it would be better if we could, like, be broadcasting it live, right, and be commenting on it, sort of like a political convention or something, right?
Yeah,
like, wouldn't that be more fun?
That would work.
You know, yeah, where we could, like, interject comments while they were talking.
Yeah, in a way, like, coming and podcasting.
Jeff, Tom Brokaw Green here.
Yeah, right.
Well,
that was stupid.
but you can't.
Oh, Sims Animals.
You can't take anything away from your E3 EA live blog. Your EA live blog was enjoyable. I mean, it just depends what the point is, and for me, it's always been like a milestone of where the industry is right now in this broad stroke. And I actually. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I kind of miss the sweaty fanboys.
Well, yeah, that's the weird thing. This is kind of like a be careful what you wish for thing. It's like,
yeah,
all we ever did
no
was complain about
fanboys.
It. It's like, where are they? Where are the fat guys lining up to get their picture taken?
At least you
come back,
it.
Fat boys.
At least you acknowledge.
What?
I was saying, at least you acknowledge it, that you're inconsistent. Because it's
completely.
I know beforehand would be exactly what you were asking for. Why do they have to let so many fuckers
No, this
in?
Was like
and
our dream years ago.
Of them
Please
holding
die,
giant
all of you.
Sacks of shit. Just to, like, get it out of our system. That, like, do you see this? Look at the fucking picture if you didn't see it. Like, now you don't have to do it. But
we miss it.
Speaking of which, it's time to give this away. I give it a Viewmaster for... Fallout 3, it's the Simtek 1000 Holographic Archive. It's up. It's just like the Viewmaster.
On that note, let's give That's a shout-out to Kensha Hall, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Or an RIP Kensha Hall, because that's
Rest
another thing
peace.
I miss.
Yeah, you're right. We're the home of thousands of great stories, Kensha Hall.
Yeah.
That shit just writes itself. Thank you, Kensha Hall.
Sean Baby special.
Yeah, exactly.
This would probably be on demo.
You're right. None of those people are here. None
Where
of those,
are
like,
they?
Wacky DVD, you know, make your own DVD. Whatever.
It's too expensive. Yeah,
Argentinian like mouse company.
Yeah.
It goes one way or the other. This is like before E3 was like the mall where they would have like the cheesy dollar store and like the Walden Books mixed in with the Macy's and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And now it's like just the Macy's and stuff. So there's going to have to be some place where there's like a strip mall that's nothing but like the tobacco shop and the dress barn. And like, you know, this is like the saddest like mini malls ever. Like you can get a haircut and like a XXL size dress. That's about it. An Indian headdress. And a VHS to rent.
You know what I heard? A few days ago was that they actually, when they were thinking, you know, because last year it was in Santa Monica and that was kind of a disaster. So they knew they wanted to be back here at the convention center. And I heard that the first thing that they were thinking of doing was doing it all in Kensha Hall because it's a smaller hall. And that a bunch of the big publishers balked just because of the reputation of that hall.
Wow.
That they thought that it was like going to be too much of a psychological like bad thing. Like, oh shit, we're on the shit hall. You know, even though there would be no other hall used. No one wants to be in Kensha, even if there's
really
nothing
not
else.
Different because the various rooms that they have reserved now were in the past occupied by some of the lowest caliber.
Right. But anything's better than Kensha is the thing.
This 1UP podcast is brought to you by G4, your way to get inside the year's biggest gaming event. G4 will be on the convention floor live every day with exclusive hands-on demos of over 30 of the biggest new gaming titles. E3 08 Live, week-long coverage, July 14th through the 18th, only on G4. Visit g4tv.com/E3 for details.
Did anyone else see Borderlands?
Yeah, I saw. I was there with you.
What'd you think?
That was an interesting demo.
We're laughing.
I didn't see it.
Well,
so I don't know what you're laughing
about. Well, yeah, we have to.
The break. The,
we can't inside joke. What?
The shortest version of it? Is like
was that Ryan Scott voice?
I don't know what that was.
It's a good impression.
More and more, like, it's becoming an effective description of things. It's just like whatever plus Diablo. And Borderlands basically seems to be drawing from the mentality of, I mean, and this works for Dawn of War too, right? Imagine RTS plus Diablo. And in the case of Borderlands, it's first-person shooter plus Diablo. And the plus Diablo part of the equation just means an ability to collect enormous amounts of loot, gain up in skill points, kill things and collect more items. But in Borderlands, I mean, part of that they're boasting is that there's over 500,000 different weapons to get. But then when we went and see this in action, that means, like, what you think. This is another thing that's going to come up, too, with the whole, like, quantity versus quality debate. Yeah. When we hear about how there's 500 different endings to Fallout, whenever someone says that, you're getting to the point where, like, they're putting, like, a yellow sticker on a gun, and suddenly it's a new one because the other one has, like, a black sticker on it or something. And so, seriously, they're picking up all these guns, and they do look stupid, right? I mean, this is what happens. I mean, you can cheat in a game that's, like, based in the real world that has, say, it has 20 weapons because even though all those are weapons for the game, they were actually modeled on things designed for the real world, and the people that were modeling them had every interest in their success. So, for example, if you made, like, an Augstay or something, you'll end up getting it, the Australian military to buy it or something. It's not like you're throwing away. You're making 100,000 prototypes just to toss out. So the difference is like, what I'm saying is, like, it's probably better to have 5 really good weapons in a Halo or something than to have 500,000 that are the same with different colored lights on them. And they really did strike me as that. And it was sad because in the demonstration, yeah, Randy Pitchford and I forget the other guy's name were so intent on making us like this game. It was either, okay,
it was a very surreal demo.
They're so genuinely impressed with their own game that we were hearing their enthusiasm, or what I'm inclined to believe is that they went in and they said, let's role play the 8-year-old who constitutes our ideal audience and how he is going to be reacting to
I think you're giving him too much credit.
So
you're saying that they consciously, ironically, were role playing guys who were enthusiastic about their game when in fact they're not.
Saying that they're not enthusiastic, but to this extent, to the point that, like, anytime someone would pick up a gun, and there's a gun to pick up anytime you kill someone, it'd be like, oh wow, look at that, oh my god, that's a good shotgun. Well, I have the cord.
I was trying to look sideways at you, because I was like, are they kidding with this enthusiasm? That's a fucking great gun. It's like your game, dude. Calm down.
Whoa, look at that shotgun, close quote. Oh my god, I love that shotgun.
Yeah.
Another quote. Wow, that shotgun. It's like you know the Saturday Night Live skit where they're making fun of Cher and her hair. Cher and her hair products. You didn't ever watch Saturday Night Live in the Farley days.
Oh yeah, sure,
but
I did.
It's just like, oh my god, feel her hair. Feel how soft it is. And someone else would feel it. Oh, it's so soft. How soft? Oh my god, it's so soft. So it was like this with the damn gun in the game. And it was the dumbest gun I'd seen in the game in a long time.
Yeah.
But watching it, I was just like, everyone wants to hook into the bonuses that you get from incorporating Diablo-like features in your game. And those are obvious. That's like, you have the great carrot there of getting people to continue to play and play and play because they're going to feel like they're getting something. They're picking up something new all the time. But the downside, though, is just the whole quantity over quality thing. I mean, you're going to have, like, a bunch of watered-down shit. In order to give that much away, it's got to be, a bunch of watered-down bullshit.
Well, that's been true for a while. Like, the Champions series.
Yeah.
That was that game's problem. It was a hack and slash, but none of the stuff was any good. So you'd get a lot of it, and you didn't even have any purpose for the money.
You just sell most of it.
Yeah, if there was no good loot, you don't have anything to buy.
Yeah,
so
what was the game recently where... Oh,
I'm speaking about
Conan?
The older Champions of Norrath game.
It's Conan, isn't it? The game I'm thinking about where there's a shit littered all over the streets. The people, because you loot monsters and it's just a bunch of crap. Yeah.
There's just shit you don't want, most of it.
That's what I'm saying.
Fill up your inventory box.
Right. So you just start walking down the street and there's... You know, imagine it's in real life and you're walking down the street and there's like 200 swords on the street. fuck this shit.
Ryan, am I right?
I can't even get one copper for
this. Animal Crossing, too.
Did that ever happen to you?
Because you run out of room in your house.
Yeah,
you go out in front, and you just dump all the crap in front of your house.
And then that game just turns into, like, inventory management game. Because you feel like otherwise you're, like, littering the Animal Crossing universe.
Yeah, so were any of you at Nintendo?
Yeah, I was.
Today? No. Because, so, are you... Why do I think you're an Animal Crossing fan, Ryan?
I have no idea, but I'm not.
I wish you were.
I like it.
But why did you put that on Ryan?
I don't know.
No.
I'm sorry.
Those are games that I play for 5 minutes and then realize that I never need to play them again.
I would think that your anal attentiveness would go into that game.
There's no... You're not building toward anything.
That's kind of true.
Yeah, well, you are. You're building
goals.
A museum.
It's like all there is existence. There's not like tangible numbers.
Like the
you know.
Anyway, Ryan, I don't know
you do
why.
With that game.
Yeah. I'm just getting to know all you PC guys, and for some reason, you know, I know that Ryan has like a dark console side. So I thought maybe in there was Animal Crossing.
I like
dark
Animal
console
Crossing.
Side.
But did you see the?
No, I haven't seen the new. No.
Because I
know. Oh, you know what? I wish Sean had been there because at the same time they announced this Animal Crossing game for the Wii, they announced basically the Wii equivalent of the Xbox Live headset. And it's like, it's a microphone that you put on top of your TV that like everybody can talk into.
Oh, so that mom well, can you... hear, like, if there's some, like, pederasty coming through that bad boy.
Yeah.
She could step over and yank the cord out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it showed,
well,
like...
Well, that's been Nintendo's big legitimate worry.
Yeah, right.
About getting its systems online is because they know that's, like... I don't know. I mean, it's like inviting the strangers into the playpen at McDonald's Land.
Well, and at the press conference, because you can also put your me face on the Animal Crossing character in the game, which looks really creepy.
Yeah, that sounds
so
creepy.
Like, yeah. Especially because the skin tones will be different. So you're sitting there fishing, and this creepy-looking Animal Crossing person with a me
oh, yeah,
head
that doesn't
comes
sound
over.
Good.
That's like
yeah,
when,
no.
I thought you were going to say, like, the fact that you can have your own face. On it. It's like when Ryan in fourth grade used to wear the shirt that said "Grandma loves Ryan," and he was always the day that a stranger came up and was like, "Hey, Ryan, do you want some candy?" He's like, "Oh, this guy knows my name. I'll eat his candy."
How'd you know? Never told anybody
so wait,
about
so
that.
I don't want to further pollute your GFW podcast with talk of Animal Crossing.
No, that's
so
okay.
We can move on. But
we talk consoles all the time.
I just was. You know, I was disappointed to see that Animal Crossing looks exactly the same. They added a city, you know, so uh-huh. The city looks tiny and like there's three things to do in it.
Yeah.
But the town and the house and the activities, they're just all the same.
They're so crazy because, I mean, I don't know, the kids that they're marketing this thing for are already playing Habbo Hotel and all these other like cheap ass free games that let you do a billion times the things. Yeah. It reminds me of like in the era when people were still like playing Phantasy Star. You know how there's multiple iterations and the Xbox one came out and like Shane and CJ were all loving it and I was like, you guys are crazy. Like, have you never tried a single like PC RPG? You know, like this is the fucking Stone Age.
And, same way.
And that's like Animal Crossing. I mean, these kids, like, not even us, sophisticated, like,
you know, like
you go to second
like,
Animal Crossing, you can't do the stuff.
One of the things you get to do is like they showed people sort of making up their own fishing game because you know how fishing is an activity. So it was like,
emergent
okay,
activities.
Let's say I got my four friends over and we're gonna have a contest for who can catch the best fish, and it just felt kind of sad. Like, it's a video game. It's a computer.
It's a
Can't
pedo
the
chat
computer
room.
Design the game so that I don't have to make it up with my friends?
Yeah. That argument comes up a lot when you know when game developers say you know. Well, and so we're putting the tools in the hands of the gamer. It's like, no, actually, you know, we paid you $60. It's, we'd like it better if you used your tools.
Yeah.
Fucker. We want to play your game, not make your game. Did we see other good shit today?
Plenty of good stuff. Like,
yeah.
I wanted to kind of talk about Resident Evil 5 because I was so excited to learn. I just got into town last night, so I missed the press conference where they announced.
Is it still racist?
That it has,
just kidding.
That it has online co-op. But yeah. After I played it, and for some reason, like, you know, Jason Allen, the PR guy, didn't, like, I honestly hadn't heard anything about this press release, and I'm playing the whole time, and the way that it works, you know, you have Shiva, this assistant, you know, character working with you, and I was like, oh, God, like, please tell me you're doing co-op. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, we're doing co-op, and I was like, what? Because it, like, the whole time you're playing, if you imagine everything you were doing with AI, it's, like, going to be so awesome with another player, just the way that the levels are designed, kind of the usual tricks that they use in Gears of War and stuff where it's like, you know, the path is going to branch and you're going to want to, like, defend, help your guy out on the other side. That sort of thing, but just with the mechanics and the pacing of Resident Evil, I think are going to work so well. Mm-hmm. And then also, I just love the notion of a buddy system for scary games. it just works right. Mm-hmm. And I was happy to hear him announce that too, because I maintain that like Gears of War borrowed so many things from Resident Evil 4, you know, not limited to the chainsaw fatalities and things like that, but I mean the camera, some of the specific bosses like berserkers are like immediate direct adaptations from some of the blind enemies in Resident Evil 4. But then it's cool to see Capcom taking back, even though it's not like Gears of War invented co-op, you know, but to still see like, hey, this is kind of a similar game at the end of the day. We have no excuse not to do this. Mm-hmm. But that game was awesome. I mean, it would almost be fair to compare it to like Left 4 Dead, which we also played this morning. Mm-hmm. But whereas in Left 4 Dead, it's super, super fast and everything's running at you, you mm-hmm. know, nonstop. In this, the things are like coming at you more, you know, slowly, but your ability to control the game is also diminished. So, you know, mm-hmm. turning around takes more time, reloading and aiming. And
God, Left 4 Dead was fun.
That's your way of saying no more Resident Evil 4.
No, fun. I'm just free associating.
It was fun.
I liked it a lot.
You kept getting eaten. I tried to save you.
I did. I mean, I was dying, but I still had fun.
Yeah.
So do you guys have to write up all these games?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. So I have like relatively little work.
All right. So, you know.
I saw Dragon Age Origins.
Did you see it too?
I didn't see Dragon Age.
Tell us about it.
Dragon Age looks kind of... It's hard not to think of Lord of the Rings when you're watching it, you know.
Wait, did they show that battle trailer again?
They showed the level that leads up to that battle. So, okay. And you're in a walled high city trying to light a beacon while a long blonde-haired guy goes, "Atras!" And you know,
so it's like the Helm's Deep,
it's like a Swedish techno video.
Yeah, well, like orcs and goblins attack. So once you get past that, though, it looks really awesome. I'm really excited about it. But I mean, graphically, it looks nice. I'm getting distracted.
We got the loud people again.
Tell us about those orcs. From the trailer, it looked exactly like Lord of the Rings.
That's yeah, what everybody's saying.
But the trailer did. It looked like it did.
Here's the thing. I was asking the tough questions in my interview with Greg Zeschuk from BioWare because I felt like I saw a little bit of graphical stuttering in like the trailer and then a little bit in the demo, and I think I offended him because he was like, "Well, it's still being optimized." You know, I mean, developers. I think we're seeing this all around. You saw it with Mirror's Edge or with Randy Pitchford. Like, they're very close to the project. They're very sensitive about it. And obviously, like, we're seeing unfinished software, so some of it we have to filter through. But I often feel like it's my job to just ask to see if there's anything mm-hmm. else there.
It's kind of, I don't know, though. I think that I kind of believe that those questions are largely pointless because it's like, how else are they going to answer it?
I guess.
They're never going to tell. You know what?
Yeah, believe me, I felt that way.
That's what it's going to be like in the game. If you don't like it, fucking too bad.
We got 2 years to go, but we're not optimizing it. Fuck you.
I mean, yeah, there's the thing that it's like they have enough time. It's like you should just assume it. They assume that you're assuming that, you know, that you have the goodwill to think the same. But it's like if it really comes down to it, are they going to say, even though in their head they're like, fuck, our programmer guys have been sweating over that one for 6 months, and they still can't fix it.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Anyway, the point is, despite that, I was being picky. I guess that's what I felt bad about later, is like I was being picky. So, because it looked awesome. I thought it looked great, and the combat looked really fun, and it's very tactical. It's very much like Baldur's Gate 2, where, you know, your characters have little circles under them, and you pick them. But I guess you can, like, break up your party a little bit and have some of your party in one room. And
so you can go all the way out to an isometric perspective,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah, you can zoom in, you can pause the action, you can pull back. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's all about combos of attacks, and mm-hmm. we saw some really great like magical spells and some big ominous enemies and big battles. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was pretty exciting, but yeah.
Were you able to sample it as an RPG much? In this environment?
I don't understand what you mean.
Well, I mean, say, for example, you could look in and it would be fairly easy to demonstrate what the combat's like in the game. But, I mean, it's such a long game like that. I mean, imagine in 10 minutes showing someone what Mass Effect is.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it's just so much more difficult to give you a sense of, you know, where you can play 5 minutes of Pac-Man and you know what you're in for. I mean, in RPG, it seems like there's a challenge.
I guess since they're so clearly describing it as a return to their roots, we saw a corpse being looted with, like, new gear being put on and stuff. We didn't see the leveling or the character creation system, which is one of the... I mean, it's not a new announcement.
Or even like a quest.
The origins. I mean, we saw some conversations and things, but I guess the origin thing where you pick a certain beginning for your character and choices you make during that time develop your character into what it will be later in the game and actions that you'll be able to do and story points that will happen later. We didn't actually get to see that, but I mean, I felt like the RPG roots of it are pretty clear.
I think it's just exciting in general that they're doing it, that they seem committed to it now. This seems to be their big new game. It's the only thing that they're pimping here at E3, and they went out of their way at the EA press conference to say, you know, this is our new PC franchise, and like you said, Jen, the spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate. They said also it was going to be on the 360. Later, but he said in the future. He made a point of saying in the future, but I thought it was funny to read online Pink saying like, haha, PC guys, it's on both now, when I actually thought it was the opposite. It was sort of like, haha, we get
shit.
It first. No, that's not the point. I don't mean like to get into the console versus PC war, but what I just mean is that the fact that BioWare at this point in the game doesn't necessarily have to make another PC game. They don't. They could just go for the bigger fish all the time. And they're choosing, with their resources and their time, to make a dedicated PC game. Great that it's being ported later. Everybody should play it. That's fine. But I'm happy that they're choosing to go PC first.
I have to print this out later, yeah. But I had a Hero of the Web from our forums, and that was a reaction to Final Fantasy 13 being coming to Xbox 360.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of mentality. Like, when you're saying, I'm just, like, shaking my head at the whole way that this works. But this guy was, like, saying... He's like, you know, if you know anything about Japan, he's like, and I'm an expert, like, you know, uh-huh. That honor is really important. And I'm going to tell you about...
This,
like,
wasn't just you posting us on all,
no, it's
was
like,
it?
It could have been a better, like, yeah, it could have been the kind of shit I would say, like, when I'm playing Team Fortress 2 or something. And, like, I mean, that video called Honor. And he was just saying, like, you know, they basically need to fall on their own sword for their fans because they're releasing this game on 360 as well.
What?
PS3. But so then there's other threads, and the titles are just like, there is no God confirmed. You know, and this is because this game is coming out on multiple platforms. This was why I woke up sick. I woke up sick yesterday morning, and I thought, I just got done listening to, you know, my alarm clock is like, you know, not talk radio, it's like NPR and stuff. And they were talking about, you know, what's happening with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I mean, just the dire state of our economy, the ongoing, you know, developments in the housing crisis and stuff. And I turn on my computer, and I look, and, like, I see this thread. And I was like, there's, like, a billion, you know, there's a billion stories and, you know, like, 5,000 sites all talking about this stuff. And then you look in this thread, and there's just, like, all these, like, three-word responses about how there's no God because of this. And I was like, dude, that
well,
would
I'll
prove
tell
that
you,
there's
I'll
God
tell you.
Fucking thread.
No, I will
and
tell
I
you
turned
proof
it off.
Of no God, Sean. And this is for real. No multiplayer in Dragon Age.
What?
No multiplayer. It's a single-player game.
Wow.
Which, wow. I mean, it was like, it broke my heart in the interview. And I'm serious. I'm not using hyperbole here. I was really upset because, like, anybody who's listened to me on podcasts before knows that I'm really into LAN cooperative RPGs.
Yeah, but hi, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, no multiplayer.
Baldur's Gate 2.
Huh?
Dark Alliance?
No, Baldur's Gate 2.
Didn't have multiplayer.
You can play it in multiplayer. You can play it in LAN.
Oh, boy. We need someone with a better memory than me.
We need a fact check.
So.
No, I've played
we
it in LAN.
Need a fact checker. Fact checker!
Well, it would help. I mean, like, I'm definitely not going to complain about
I have
some
played...
multiplayer games, but it's like Oblivion was fine. Single player Fallout, we just looked at single player.
Yep.
Not, you know, the biggest concern. But... I absolutely like it in Resident Evil 5. The thing
You've
that works there...
You've never played Baldur's Gate 2 in LAN? It's totally awesome.
I don't believe that you can. I remember it being just like a party-based D&D game. I can't... How would you even do that?
You All hook right, up let's... your computers and... Oh, okay. I'm now you're like making me question my valid. I think
that's okay.
Pretty valid memory.
I think Skip's over
Skip,
here.
We got Skip Googling. We're marking time here while Skip, ace fact checker, Andrew Skip Fister. Lightning fingers Fister.
In the meantime, you know what I saw today that is coming to PC?
Yeah, what?
Street Fighter 4.
I just played some of that.
Really?
Yeah, did you?
Played Evan. Yeah,
that seems
Rufus,
like an odd
Rufus
port.
Is your new main, huh?
What?
Rufus is your new main.
Is he the fat one?
Yeah.
It's
like a
no.
bowl of shit Isn't, with like a happy trail, dirty happy trail coming up his pot belly. That's Isn't nasty. That a... Like still old Japan, they love America. Like what? That's an American character.
Because he's guys. A big fat guy.
Yeah, I'm sure we got some games to hook him up back though. Kung Fu Chaos. They still owe us a couple.
Yeah,
that.
They do. They do. We can't complain about that. What? What? It did have land? Oh, Jen's right.
I'm all insulted, but that's okay.
Okay.
How are we going to edit
standing,
this?
I stand.
We don't edit.
We're not editing. We don't edit.
Let's talk about Street Fighter.
I was wrong. There.
Ryan, tell us about
but
Street Fighter.
Jeff, let me just tell you, it's really, really fun that way. Well, you should totally play it.
We'll get back to it.
I still play. I mean, we still play it sometimes when we have nothing else
really?
To play. Yeah.
Okay, well.
Nerd alert.
I probably
alert.
Didn't have a land back then. So.
It's hard to set up. I'm not saying it's easy. I mean, it's difficult, but...
Okay.
So I'm bummed that Dragon Age is totally single player. But anyway, moving on to wherever we were.
I don't know. Where were we, Sean?
No. Ryan's talking.
Street Fighter. It's awesome.
Yeah. Really? On the PC?
Well, they have like arcade cabinets set up. I guess it releases in arcades next week.
Okay.
But it's coming out on PC as well as consoles. At least that's what all the...
I don't see the point of that.
Well, if you plug in your controller, same as your 360 controller already works.
Okay. I guess.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
fell.
Shit. Yeah. Hold on. Sean's getting a phone call. Let's put this on air.
All right.
he turned it off.
So what about it? What are you liking about it, Ryan?
Street Fighter. It's awesome. No, it... Like,
thanks for the insight. Yeah, next.
That's what I'm here for. Well, Street Fighter 2, you know, that was sort of like... People are still playing Street Fighter 2 today. Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. And it's been like... I don't think there's been like a 2D fighter since then that is still sort of in the public eye.
That's because we've all moved on to...
Well, no, hey...
Dangerous territory, though. I mean, because like, yeah, it's like, sure... In the public eye, but it's like Mortal Kombat 2 is very huge in the public eye, much more so than Street Fighter 3 Third Strike. And Street Fighter 3 was an excellent game.
Right, and Street Fighter 3, like that was a game that was basically designed that catered specifically to the hardcore crowd, like with the parrying system and all that. And Street Fighter 4, at least in my limited time with it, it feels like it's a lot more accessible.
Can it be that it was all so simple then?
Yeah, there you go.
I was singing you your chorus, man.
Yeah. So Street Fighter 4 seems like it's pretty cool. I like it.
It kind of threw me because it was so much like, it's so much more like 2
right.
than any of the games that came afterward. I mean, even the Alpha series, you know, like just not being able to block in the air and stuff. It was fun. I don't know, though, about, I mean, I think it's fun. I think it's cool, but I think I like Soul Calibur 4 a lot more so far. I know this is comparing games of the same genre. Sue me for it. You know how fighting game fans are, though. Oh, man, you can't. One's got weapons, and one's in 3D. The other one's... No, no, but it's not in 3D.
Sean Elliott, retard, confirmed.
Yeah, there it goes. Fuck that. I'm tired of hearing that stuff. I got to bring this up because before we were taping, you know how we always make fun of like when you'll see like an internet thread or something and the whole thing is loaded? With those catchphrases, those wacky catchphrases.
Oh, no's. But like, FTW. That was,
in my mind, yeah, I translated
that. I hate
that
oh, no's.
Yeah.
To like, again, you know, it's like, imagine if 10 years ago people were doing this and it would sound pretty much like, I pity the fool, turtle power. And then, what else? Avoid the noid. Where's the beef? Show me the money. It's all good.
I saw
that's more recent.
I banned the random pluralizing in my house.
Like,
you know, like started with internets. And then moved on to every other word.
Oh, really? Well, was this your husband?
I decided I'm officially too old for that shit. Yeah.
Wait, you're saying this to your hubby?
And people I talk to a lot at work. And
was
stuff.
He like, where's the dinners?
Something like that.
Is he into lolcats?
So imagine,
lolcats I'm okay with.
Whoa.
But random pluralizing, no.
Imagine your husband going around the house going, trick, psych, not, and like stuff like that. That's pretty much what it is. Just if you ever hear it, go,
No. I don't speak in Anthony's weird twin language. Okay?
That's just that's our punishment vent whenever someone says something stupid, which happens all the time, myself included. But that's how we punish each other.
What, the fake laugh?
Just do that laugh, yeah, and then everyone knows, like, they're just like, damn, man, I shouldn't open my mouth again if I'm going to say some stupid shit like that. Fucking sorry, guys. So, yes, anything else about Street Fighter? I mean, that new character, Rufus, though. He's like just a big, giant ball. Imagine like an
Is
earth ball with feet and arms on
Rufus.
It.
Rufus.
And then the ball composing his torso just kind of like wiggles and jiggles the whole time.
I heard he was created as a tribute to George Carlin.
Really?
What?
Okay, you're making that up. I was getting all misty-eyed.
He's wearing like a zippered jumpsuit. It's zipped like all the way down to his like pubis, and there's like the happy trail coming up.
That's just a good word, pubis.
Pubis.
That's a guaranteed laugh line.
It's where
you get the word
penis
pubis
found
in
the Venus mound, right on this guy. He's got a tattoo of it. No, yeah. So it seems pretty cool. Seems like a fun game.
I'm trying to think if there were any other big things.
We saw Dawn of War 2. What did you think of that?
Oh, Dawn of War 2. I thought it looked good. I mentioned it to them in the little demo we had. I thought it was very interesting that they're kind of going in, they're kind of, I wouldn't say a bold new direction. I mean, it's still an RTS on the PC, but they're breaking away from the formula that was Dawn of War 1 with some interesting
Changes, if you compare this to not to Company Heroes, but to Dawn of War 1.
Yeah,
I think
right.
They're really substantial differences.
Yeah, they are. I mean, and you know, we know that gamers are much more conservative than they like to think they are, you know, when it comes to changing their games. You know, they all want change, but then actually it turns out they don't.
Like you and E3?
Yeah, well, fuck you. yeah, you're right. That's okay. oh, boy.
Does this game, but is this something that could this conceivably...
Oops.
Kind of replace Company of Heroes? Or is this on its own track?
I think it's probably still on its own track, probably mostly just because of the setting.
It'll replace it for me, probably.
They took some of Company Heroes' ideas, that's for sure.
Right. It's kind of like, I mean, it's just like a leapfrogging where there were a number of things that they came up with for Dawn of War that they ended up doing. That they basically prototyped for Dawn of War, ended up implementing in Company Heroes.
Yeah.
And then likewise now... They're taking some of those ideas and bringing them over to this game. I would say it would replace it just in the sense where, like, you know, for me, Company Heroes continues to be the game that I play on a weekly basis. And then if there's going to be that game where you're like, okay, this is the one I'm going to invest, but, pardon me, literally, you know, hundreds of hours playing, like, it to me, it has the markings of it. It's kind of interesting, though. There's, like, there's so many people that are like, Company Heroes, I don't want to play. It's more of that World War II shit. And then there's, like, for me, I'm getting used to the Warhammer stuff. For the most part, the guys look cool. But, like, there are parts that's a stretch for me. Like, when the orc vehicle comes out, it's like a war boss truck. That was the fucking pizza thrower from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if I ever saw it. You know how sometimes the difference between, you know, when you design a vehicle and a real army designs a vehicle to win a battle with, and then there's the kind of vehicle you design when you've got some oversized action figure and you got to figure out some fucking way to configure some plastic to get that fucking thing in there. And that's what the thing looked like when it came out. It's like, the orcs are broad-shouldered. How they're not going to fit in a regular compartment. Like, open top, baby. All the way.
But that's part of, like, that's been part of the charm of that franchise, really, is like that. They've embraced that kind of goofy thing. And that's one thing I thought was a little odd in the Dawn of War 2 that we saw so far. It's like, it looked like they're making it a little more... I was going to ask them about this, and I didn't. It looks like they've made it a little more gritty and, like, sort of quote-unquote realistic than Dawn of War 1 was, mm-hmm. which was much more in the kind of, like, Warcraft cartoony style, which, and yes, I don't need anyone to tell me that Warhammer predated Warcraft. I know that.
Right.
So shut up.
I would say, yeah, I think part of what you're noticing too, though, is all the new, you know, animation that they're adding. I mean, this again is what I'm used to from Company Heroes, but like, whereas in the original Dawn of War, I mean, you can go in some area and fight. People are kind of just going to be doing things. But in this game, though, you can see if someone's under fire, they're going to react as they would in like a first-person shooter or something. You actually see the animations. They're going to take cover. They're going to use cover. All those sorts of things just translate. That in the blood, just the higher detail and stuff. It seems like the Warhammer universe if you had like a better engine is what I...
Yeah, I guess so. But the engine, but you could have a better engine and not have it be more sort of like...
It probably is grittier. I mean, if you've looked, they always send us those Warhammer books, the ones that we give out to pay our freelancers.
The ones that we read out loud on the podcast.
And they're full of just like gnarly stuff, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, they are.
That's like you put on the inside of your trench coat for reading material.
That was a crazy 6 months of. We got like a landfill full of Warhammer books. That was unreal.
So let's point a few before we joke too much about the game. There's a few things that I learned today I want to point out that we didn't talk about when we talked about it last. And that was like the their solution for spawning in, since you're only ever really in control of 4 or 5 squads at a time. And each of the squad leaders is this unit you're supposed to like identify with. You're getting, you know, power-ups for them and things. This is, again, where they're borrowing from the Diablo thing. Mm-hmm. And if that squad leader falls in the course of a battle, he doesn't die. You can go and revive him or her. Whereas, like, the squad members are dead.
The red shirts are dead.
And then you're able to you're able to reinforce red shirts in two different ways. And one is that, like, your force commander could have... a power, and you're able. I'll talk about this in a minute. How you're able to slot these in, and that would be like to pull a drop pod down. So when a drop pod will fall from your spaceship, and guys come out of it. You can also smash enemies with it.
That was cool. I like that. That was a cool idea.
Yeah, I mean that looked great. I mean just the watching it play, I mean it's entertaining for me. It's part of why I like, you know, the way that artillery works in Company Heroes and stuff. I just love to see it.
Relic has a really nice. They have a really nice tactile feel. They're really good with like sounds and things like that. Yeah, when this drop pod drops from the sky with your 4 units, it doesn't just like, you know, this thing like crashes down onto the earth and they
shakes
made a point
the whole
of
world,
saying,
it
shakes the whole screen.
Even if guys like 10 feet away will be thrown to their feet.
Right, so you could actually crush your enemies with this thing that's really just a spawn thing for new units. Mm-hmm. It was neat.
Yeah, I agree. They totally
that's my official
that.
Review.
Same. Monolith is really good about that too. I think both those companies are probably foremost in like getting that sense of impact to everything they do. And so, yeah, you saw when they used the orbital laser for that bombardment, and that was great.
Right.
When the vehicle blows up in this, it's not. I mean, it's very getting away from the toy-like feel of an RTS and just making it seem that like these, even a grenade, right? You saw them throw it was called a melt the bomb. It's basically a sticky bomb. Threw it on the vehicle. The vehicle blows up. Wheels go flying off. The guys inside it are like burning and. Kind of roll out from it. The other way I was talking about reinforcing units is to like this new system is that instead of just like capturing a flag, in depending on the world you're in, there might be like a building or a structure that's got some meaning in the larger narrative. Like there's this shrine to some like holy space marine dude, and you basically capture that. But in order to do it, it's kind of like this big set piece battle. You're like, do I want to do this? You know, it's going to be a challenge, and you want to approach it with some foresight. So. Say maybe, you know, I'm gonna have a sniper ready here to take out their guard when I attack. My jet jump pack guys are gonna leap over the wall and get inside and attack. I'm gonna follow up with this. But then ultimately when you do take that, you'll be able to reinforce from that building, but you'll also maintain it throughout your campaign as you're going to other planets and stuff. You still technically hold that shrine, and then it increases morale for your army and gives you a few other perks, but you might have to defend it too.
Right.
Because there could come a time when the enemy's like, well, we're trying to get this back. Then you'd go and have to wage war defense at that same site in order to maintain it and the bonuses it's providing you. So that was something else to show. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
This is what I was scared of coming on GFW Radio.
What?
I haven't even started. I'm like not talking about it because I know you and Ryan are like...
No, last time I was like scared, but you made it a safe and comfortable place for me, Sean. This time,
but see,
you took off the training wheels, and now
right, you gotta go with it, Jen. Jen, give us your 100-word. You know, how are you feeling about Dawn of War 2 right now?
Can I have some of Ryan's orange soda, please? That's my 12-word review.
So the other thing, okay, I want to.
It sounds neat, you
because,
guys. It sounds
there you
real
go. See,
neat.
I said it looked neat.
In this case, I think that they're borrowing wisely from the Diablo play mechanics, but I don't see them as like bringing the baggage along with it, insofar as it's not randomized levels. Right. All the levels are really short, too, which is interesting. It's like it's about how you're going to approach it from, tactically, rather than going in and slogging through, building up your army, just to like at the, just have it turn into some grueling war of attrition at the very end, where you're like, please just let this level end. I mean, it seemed to be like, right? I mean, the level we saw, they basically played through levels. Like, I could
and
do that,
said
right?
That. He said it was going to be a lot of short missions.
A little, and I think that seems like a good decision.
I thought that was cool, too. Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, you, all the stuff you're getting, it's not like every single guy you kill drops stuff, but so when someone does have a drop, you're like, okay, I'm going to grab that, and it's going to be cool, but you're not going to be able to use it. It's not like you're going to pause the game right then and equip it and see what it does, but then when you go back after you complete the mission and you go back to your spaceship and you're going to outfit your groups, you only have, like, so many slots that you can put stuff in. So it's like you have different weapons and armor and stuff, but then you also have these power slots, and it's like, am I going to use this ability that's like a marksman that lets me snipe, or that lets me draw in reinforcements, or an orbital bombardment, or like, you know, how am I going to use this power, and how is it going to mix with the other slots I have?
Don't you think that Borderlands is better because there's like 500,000 of them?
There's a lot of there. They said they're up to about 600,000, which is funny because technically all that means is adding a yellow texture and then suddenly multiplying that by the 500,000 you already have. You've now got like, you know, we're talking like exponential. Like by the time this game comes out, they're going to be like 3.6 trillion weapons. it was so sad.
And every one of them
like,
is going to be great.
Oh, look at the scope on that. That's a nice scope. And it's like, you just had another weapon. The scope one was like an X crosshair. Another was a triangle.
Right. Did you notice like, they were doing that too with like the as he was going through the level, like they were commenting on like the like they would like shoot a guy and like and he'd go like, oh, did you see the way that guy fell? Like they were talking to each other. It's like
I felt bad for him
stop,
too. Cause
stop
to
loving your own game so
at the
much.
End of that level.
No, that was so cool the way that guy fell.
Did they point out the water effects?
That they didn't. At the end of the level though, a guy called Mordecai comes out. And he's about as typical a toady as you can find in a shooter, right? I mean this guy's fucking named Mordecai. He's just like he's just Joe Blow. But he comes out, and they're like, you're going to have to wait to see what Mordecai's
about. Oh, yeah,
about.
He, like, he jumps like, down jumps off a down ledge, and then they, like, pause
to
it like
to be continued? Like, if
yeah,
that was
like
a trailer.
Like, some big suspense point had
that
built.
Was like a TV trailer, you know? Like, that would be the series that was never filmed.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're going to have to stop it here, guys. And we're like, okay. Can we go now?
I'm sorry, Randy, if you end up hearing this.
I would just give it you like, shit. It, yeah, it looked good, but it was just kind of funny and surreal to be. I had the same experience at a Spore demo, not at E3, but way back when they did it at Maxis. It was that event where they had it divided up into different stations. So it was like five different stations representing the five different games. It was the Civ game, whatever, and there was they had one that was just creating the creature. Yeah, that was it. And at the stations, they had different guys demoing the different things, and they were all nice.
Someone walks up. That's some nice dug feet. Look at those web feet.
It was the guy
good,
who was
good.
No, it was
there,
the guy
Mitch
who was making it.
Comes
it was
over
the,
there. Look at those space tires.
Well, that's what it was.
Good space tires.
It was like that, but it was the guy who was making it himself, and he was just by himself. He didn't have like a partner.
So he was, like patting himself.
So it was like he was sitting there, and there were like three journalists, you know, sitting there, and he's like, demo. He's like, okay, so we can give him these feet. He's like, oh god, these feet are so cool. You know, he was like so thrilled with himself as he was making it. He's like, haven't you been doing this all day? And like for the last 6 months.
That's
he was like he was like
it.
Demoing it for himself, and he was pleased with the game.
They're
like, should we leave you alone so you can enjoy this by yourself? Because
would they have kicked you out if you were like?
I mean, and it was cool, and that's the thing. Like, there were things about Borderlands I liked. It was just sort of interesting that they were so into it themselves.
Right.
So it's like,
is EA publishing Borderlands?
2K.
Okay.
They aren't randomized. It's a good thing they aren't randomizing the levels, as far as I could tell, but. In the section they showed, it was like the AI wasn't especially impressive. There just really wasn't anything noteworthy. It was like, this game is going to get by in the strength of those 500,000 guns, and so that's kind of why we're making such a big deal of those guns. However, when they showed the part when you're driving around, and we say we is because it's a cooperative game.
Yeah.
When they're driving out around in the Badlands, that looked pretty fun. You know, you could run enemies over and stuff, and you could switch seats, and the animation for that was great. Like, when you're both playing, you decide,
right,
hey, I'll drive now. You don't have to stop the vehicle. You both just
right, there's like
a
switch to just switch seats.
You do some hazard boy maneuvers. You know,
right, you watch them climb over the seats. That was kind of neat.
Yeah, so that stuff looked cool. And I mean, I know there's some interesting things. Like, there's this giant creature in the game that basically is a walking hive for these pterodactyl-type things that come out of it. And that kind of stuff sounds interesting. But Mordecai and his guys, I mean, that was basically like a first-person shooter of an auto assault quest. which is to say, like, well, what, Mingo's Marauders, Mordecai is, like, basically Mingo.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It does these guys too much for liking their... I mean, of course they're going to like their own game. And the opposite would be weird, too, if they were up there hating on their game. And
yeah, there's that
in a
fucking
demo.
Shotgun.
We're not going to show you that fucking level.
You see this one's orange?
This level's really stupid. Yeah. Here's another one of our useless weapons.
Yeah. There's a difference, though. I think, like, you know, when you think...
Guy with bad self-esteem giving a demo.
The most impressive demonstrations that I've ever seen, though... including, like, the E3 one for Half-Life 2, and it was, like, a year or two before the game came out.
Yeah.
They say almost absolutely nothing. You just watch them play, and everyone in the room is, like, can't wait to get out to tell everyone sure. they know about how insanely awesome something was.
Right.
So I was like, I mean, you could say that, too. It's like, you don't really need to oversell your stuff if it truly is, you know.
Yeah.
It truly is exciting.
Right. Yeah.
I also played, anyone else try Project Origin?
Oh, not yet.
Showcase Pavilion.
I plan on it.
The level I played was cool. It was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, again, to say, but like Monolith, they really just get, like in Condemned as well, just get the viscerality of the sort of combat scenarios that they portray in their games.
Uh-huh.
And they're definitely addressing, you know, people complain that, you know, fear was crawling through, you know, ventilation shafts and stuff and going through offices. And so in this case, the level I played was all through this torn up city. And again, just the bullet time stuff is done well. You know, like bullet time was already old hat when Fear came out, mm-hmm. but no one cared because it just worked so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it they delivered on it so well in that game. I mean, so that was there. And I played this level where I got in a mech, and the visual quality of everything that was going on was pretty incredible. I mean, there's like smoke everywhere. You're like, you know, enemies are emerging through the smoke, and you're in this mech with this chain gun, and you're ripping through them, and it's pretty gross. I mean, it reminds me of, like, Akira, and I know they're inspired by Akira.
Yeah.
But it's just like, yeah, just pulping guys. Guys are turning into mist. You're shooting these missiles. They're kind of like the rockets from Robotech, where they're just, like, spiraling around through the environment and nailing other mechs that are coming out at you and stuff. And so from the short level that I played in that, judging it only, like, not on the quality of its story or anything else.
My eye's starting to twitch. I'm getting stressed.
Your eyes.
Can I go?
Do you want to be dismissed?
Thing? Because you're definitely into realms that I am not familiar with.
Did
and
the pulping,
may not become.
Did the red mist scare you off?
It was the Akira. When you brought up Akira, it just like a
wow,
movie
that triggered something inside Jen.
A movie I have fallen asleep watching just too wow. many times. Can I? Think I yeah, can I? Do you mind?
E3 stress.
You can be dismissed. Thank you, Jen Sal, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was meaningful and special.
It was special
and
for
I'm
us.
And I'm sorry. Too. I'm stressed and I have
no, no. We all have work to do
okay.
here.
Yeah.
We're it's a late night here. We're going to be writing all night. EGM. Man, what a bitch for leaving early.
Damn, I'm getting pretty stressed, too.
Yeah. You got a lot of writing to do.
Yes, I do.
All right. Well, did that put the... You were mid-sentence there.
Yeah.
You want to finish it now?
Well, it's like the whole time I feel like I have to imagine an audience. I feel like I'm saying stuff no one cares about. Like,
we care,
I think
Sean.
We all got... We got some happening in our podcast dynamic. We don't... None of us like the same kind of games.
What are you talking about?
So it's like we all just...
What are you talking about?
I don't like shooting stuff, and Sean doesn't like picking up 10 Gore-Tusk livers.
Yeah.
I like doing both.
You got to find it. You
know. You're the conduit.
Just don't start talking about sports games, and then we're fucked.
What about Mario sports games?
Those okay? are okay.
All right.
Yeah, I like Mario Golf.
It's a good one.
What, are you saying without Sean Malloy here, we've lost our unity?
No, I don't know. I mean, we've always had different tastes in games.
Right,
stuff.
That's
I
okay.
I just feel more, I don't know, for some reason this whole time, I'm like, there's, like, so many things I want to talk about, and I'm like, I know, like, you guys are, like, eyes are glazing over, so I'm like, I won't talk about them, but I'm like, where would I talk about them? It was like pretty much nowhere.
Well, that just makes me sad.
Yeah, our days are over. We're done.
Oh man, don't start that.
So I don't know. I mean, what else do we play? I mean, we played a whole lot today.
We did. It was a very busy day. It was too busy of a day, and it's not over.
We went to SOE's.
We did go to SOE. What did you think of DC Online?
All they had to show was a trailer and like a little behind the scenes thing. So there's not really much to go on, but. They're billing it as sort of like a, like an, I guess a cross between like an action RPG and an MMO. Like you don't, they're saying, you know, instead of like hitting, you know, one and two and watching a dude, you know, punch another dude and watch a number pop up over his head. It's like, I guess there's actual like Twitch involved. Like you, you shoot an arrow at somebody, you have to aim at them. It's not like aim assist.
Is this like closer to Tabula Rasa, though, than like, you know, God of War style action? Or even,
all they had was like a trailer, so I don't really. Yeah, I don't.
It was kind of odd.
They
had an actual human there, a guy, very nice guy. Chris was his name.
No robots, just humans. Human.
No, who said he was? You know, he was there to introduce the thing we were going to watch. But then what we watched was like other guys talking.
Yeah,
so
we watched the dudes who were there talking in an
right.
Interview.
Oh yeah, and the guys who were talking were standing right there. It was a little weird. Yeah. It was like, why don't we turn off the video and you guys just talk to us? Why do we have to watch you talking to us when you're standing right there? It was a bit odd.
Yeah,
bit of an odd choice.
Did you get like a free like alarm clock radio or something?
No, they had free. I might have it here in my pocket. Here, we got a free sort of like. No, what the fuck's this? Somewhere, it's sort of like a. It's like a Swiss Army knife sort of thing, but it was for the agency. I don't know where it is. I left it somewhere.
You can't be a superhero without one. Oh, for the agency.
Yeah.
Kasim Emo Royale.
So, right, I saw the agency. And the agency is Kasim Emo Royale. The agency was a demo I got. The agency is a demo I got with the two Jesuses. So that was pretty funny because
because
I was getting the demo with the main guy, and then another guy walks up to join the demo. And his name is like Jesus something or other. But the person, the like PR person who walked him up said, hey, he wants to join the demo. This is Jesus. And she called him Jesus to the other guy. I was like, it's not Jesus. It's his Jesus. His last name was Hispanic. Okay, but then the weird thing was like a minute later, a second Jesus walks up. Like how often does that happen?
But he wasn't Zeus.
No, he was probably also a Jesus. It was like two Hispanic dudes, both named Jesus. So it was two Jesuses and me getting the demo. But actually the funny part of the story to me was not that. It's not that funny, really. But what was funny was like, so the guy gives the demo. And again, this was just, it wasn't a demo. He was just introducing like a film that they then showed.
Just a trailer or
a trailer.
Something?
But it was actually a trailer of somebody playing the game. So he was actually walking through the gameplay as he was, you know, showing this canned film. But anyway,
that's a little better.
But anyway, so we watched this whole thing, and it was kind of long. It was like at least 10 minutes, maybe more. And, you know, he goes into detail about the mechanics and everything. And then he goes, at the end, he goes, do you have any questions? And one of the Jesuses goes, well, forgive me, but I don't know much about video games. What's an MMO?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was like, wow.
You're like, I thought you were supposed to be omniscient, bro.
yeah. Don't you know everything? So I just thought that was kind of funny.
That's
because you could see the look on his face. The guy's been talking for like 15 minutes.
He just wasn't ready
about all the dynamics about the game, and it's like, oh, you didn't understand a word I said, did you? Shit. Well, see, this is a game you play online.
What's online?
Wow.
It's like, imagine, like,
that's amazing.
He gets scolded because of it. Like, one of his managers was there, and like, I told you to give these demos like you're giving them to Alexander Graham Bell. Like, you know, supposing that your audience knows no more about games in general than Mr. Bell.
You're an old lady. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I didn't know what to think about the agency. You know, this is their Sony spy MMO. And, yeah. It's a few years in the making now, right? Is that right?
It's and probably they didn't show probably a year ago.
They didn't show the same demo they showed last time, but it was very similar to the other demo. I don't know. I want to believe, but I don't know if I can.
It's rough territory. New IP. It's not, you know, it's not licensed from anything. And as Conan shows you, even something as like unremarkable as Conan. I mean, in considering compared to like, you know, Lord of the Rings having all these movies that have come out recently or something, you know, like whereas if Age of Conan had come out in the 80s, it would have been the more popular one.
Hey, what the hell? Conan's a force.
But it's like, yeah, Tabula Rasa couldn't do it. AutoSell couldn't do it. It's like maybe they should consider like some kind of alternate like business model.
It's, you know, dangerous like territory to want to in and out. I do have to say that I thought Warhammer Online looked great.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what? I'm afraid for that game.
Are you?
They just announced recently that they're cutting back a bunch of features in order to make their launch date. They've killed like four classes.
Four classes?
Like
How many were there?
Several of which were like the their attached races, like tank class. So there are races, because all the classes are divided, you know, these races have these four classes, and this race has these four classes. And so there are races that are completely devoid of a tank class, which is, you know, one of the necessary components to a group. And they've said that, like, there's only going to, instead of having, like, each race have its own starting city, there's going to be, like, one starting city for, you know, this side and one starting city for this side. Like, they've substantially...
And they had the whole idea of that there would be, like, these four citadels, and now there are only two.
Well, right. There's, like, you know, seven or eight races or something, you know. And they've pared it down so much, like I don't understand how they decided to kill what they killed.
Well, what if they're really just basically scaling back for a launch, and then, like, they can go in and patch this stuff in later, which would seem fine to me.
Yeah, that's the problem, though.
How apeshit should you go about content you're not going to get to until you've played for hundreds of hours?
But we're talking about starting zones.
The class thing is disturbing, too.
Right.
Because, like, look at what, you know, Funcom made some significant class changes prior to releasing Age of Conan.
And well, they merged a bunch of classes, right? Yeah.
And I think that, as far as balance goes, that proved to be fairly disastrous. And those were precisely the overpowered classes. Because they had elements from each of these other classes that really would have been taking more work to balance.
Right. So this game, I don't know.
But hey, the game's also got to come out too. I mean, what would you? I don't know, man. I can't advise anything.
You know, every time
who knows if it's gonna bomb, and then it would be a waste to spend another 6 months fixing this tank class for Ryan, or it'll be popular and they'll be like, hey. You guys helped us see through this first few months.
Really,
make a tank.
It is the most unpredictable genre. This is like if I was going to go into game development, this is the one genre I would not
want to touch it.
It's like, fuck this. I mean, years of development, you know, all the resources, the overhead of the servers, the overhead of the personnel to deal with these things, and just the intense, utterly, you know, impossible to predict crapshoot of whether people are going to dig it or not.
Almost all the biggest, you know, horror stories we've heard in the past few years,
including
the ongoing one with Flagship right now, have to do with, like, if the game's not an MMO, but it's big, ambitious multiplayer games that
intend
to make their revenue through subscriptions.
Sure.
Right. Every time I hear something like this, like with any game, you know, where they're cutting features in order to make some set in stone launch date, you know, for their quarterly profits or whatever, it's like, I think, you know, there's like a select few publishers, like Blizzard or Valve or like Nintendo or Rockstar, you know, whenever you ask them, like, when is your game being released, their answer is always like, it's going to be done when it's done. You know,
that's because none of them are beholden to anyone.
But all their games come out, and they're way more awesome for it.
Well,
I don't see why other companies don't kind of see that as
well, because a lot of them
are
beholden to their stockholders.
And look what it takes to get to that position.
It takes good Half-Life. Products. They took the time to make those good products. Though.
And it's like self-perpetuating cycle too. It's like you're. You know, your publisher's not going to be like, yeah, take all the time in the world you want. Like, Valve takes time, and it guarantees something's going to be good. It's like,
right.
Well, did you make fucking Half-Life? Did you make Half-Life 2? Did you make Grand Theft Auto? Did you make Vice City? No. Well, then quit asking for all the time in the world. It's ready when we say it's fucking ready.
Right. No, that's totally right. Yeah, they earned that, right? But who's to say? You know, Company X could keep saying, well, it'll be done when we're ready, because we're not releasing until it's perfect. You know, but if they have no track record... And the game turns out to be a piece of shit when it comes out. Well, then, you know.
Well, then you
who's
get
laughing?
And like, look how long like Vanguard took to make.
Well, there you go. That's the classic, one of the classic examples, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many games we know that have been in development forever, and then when they come out, you're like, or it just gets problematic too. I mean, like, there's some cases where games come out with all the time and they're good. Like, I think Quake Wars came out. I think it was an excellent game, but I think it came out too late. If it had come out, especially for the PC market, if it had come out the same year the Battlefield 2142 did, I think it would have been like a smash hit, because that was the time, like, especially in my life as, like, you know, being like the kind of Battlefield 2 player, totally into that and ready to move on. I was ready to move on to the next thing. 2142 came out and it didn't do it for me at all. And I was like, I really wanted Quake Wars, and that would have occupied it. But instead I was like, that's when I started getting into Company Heroes. And I was just like, okay, if there's not a good shooter out for me to play on PC right now, I'm going to try something else. And then when it did come out, it's like, everyone's like, dude, this
the Doom engine? Like, this doesn't look that good. But I remember when we first saw Quake Wars, it was like, wow, this is amazing. But, I mean, time, it's just like, yeah, like, you, games are based on, like, fancy technology. You can't take forever.
Yeah.
I mean, we could be talking about a few months difference with Warhammer. I mean, I honestly don't know. It's not, like, it's not never reassuring, but at least they're being upfront about it instead of releasing the game and saying, oh, yeah, remember that shit we were talking about, all the Citadels? It ain't there. I saw Crisis Warhead too.
Yeah,
you guys check that.
How'd that look?
I got to play it, and the section I played was pretty fun. Imagine just like the lost levels of Crisis, but kind of like, I mean, it was funny to see like their whole point of this is what's different about this game from Crisis. Like every one of them, point by point, was like it was addressing my concerns with the first game. And I mean, was like, okay, cool. I must not have been alone, because I mean, I certainly don't think that they're like, yeah, let's make this game for Sean. But they were just like, he wasn't crazy, and he wasn't the only one saying these things.
Yeah.
And we internally, and they were saying, you know, they're like, yes, internally we agree. We didn't, you know, for whatever the reason, had not being able to get the game out. You know, here we go again to schedules, having to get the game out sooner than we were ready, or for whatever reason. Some of it I think had to do with min-spec, meaning the minimum specifications that you could play the game on. Mm-hmm. And what that means is basically anything above min-spec in a PC game has to be visual only. You can't work gameplay into it. So say, for example, if you have this like ability to do all this stuff with freezing and shattering, but it's happening at above the min-spec level, that means that it can only look cool. You can't base gameplay around enemies shattering cover and freezing and stuff. So I think that had to do something with it. But the whole notion of Crisis toward the end becomes totally linear. The game, you know, like in my review, I said it teaches you to fish and then throws you in a desert. In this case, it'd be like, as you're playing the game, you ramp up and ramp up, and you're like, eventually you're doing things with total confidence, like dropping C4, switching a strength suit parameter, throwing it like a football, and then detonating it as it lands on a tank, or throwing it at a helicopter or something. And then all of a sudden, you're in this place where there's like no imagination required whatsoever. You got to get in the Jeep. You can't even switch seats anymore, and you just shoot at anything that comes out at you. So now, there's tons of vehicle stuff, and it was really about emphasizing that we're going to have that scale of combat we wanted, where there's stuff coming everywhere, but it's like you can get in any vehicle you want, and if your vehicle takes a big hit, you just jump out and go hide and steal someone else's vehicle and keep going. And the gameplay was awesome. I mean, just like, you know, Crisis was cool.
Mm-hmm.
I did get from them, it was interesting, originally, because I'm curious, because this game is set concurrently with events of the original Crisis, so it's kind of like a Rosencrantz Guildenstern thing.
Right.
And I was like, were you writing the script for this at the same time that you were writing the first game, or is this an afterthought?
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like somewhere in between. They were still finishing Crisis when they got to this point with this game, but it wasn't like they weren't designed exactly at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, I was suspicious that, you know, there's all these ways to establish a crisis chronology.
Right.
And that's like, you know, when this big volcano erupts and things that are going to be visible no matter where you're at in the world.
Well, that's kind of like Half-Life, Blue Shift, right? Was that what it was?
Yeah. So you could say this is a point when there's this, like, the facility blows up or something, and you can get that. So they're doing that. But originally, I think the idea was for their Budapest studio to make an expansion, straightforward, your traditional notion of it. And they're like, okay, you guys are doing good things with this. Go ahead, make this a full game. It's only going to be like $29.99. It's coming out really soon, I think in August. And if there are some surprises, like, you know, are there any big surprises? And I couldn't get them to talk. I mean, we were talking about how, well, I do know that the ice wave levels back in, that they're able to take some things that they weren't able to put into Crisis and work them in here. And that was originally getting between the aircraft carrier at the end of the game and the shores, like the whole ocean's frozen, and you're basically going out across the frozen ocean, and there's frozen tsunami waves, you know, that you got to climb up and stuff. That's making its way back in. Maybe the hunters are the big giant alien walkers. I mean, I keep asking them, like, do we get to drive one of those, you know, like some kind of like weird stuff like that. And they just keep, you know, smiling and let me believe whatever I want to believe.
So do you think that if they fix a lot of stuff that was, you know, broken or not so great in Crisis, that for someone who hasn't played Crisis, that it would be better to maybe just get this?
I really don't know, because I think Crisis is a fantastic game. I don't recommend anyone skips it.
Okay.
I think everyone should play it.
Despite its flaws?
Yeah, and its flaws are really just, like, they only stand out more so because you're so impressed with everything
right
that goes before.
Well, you did only give it an 8.
Which we've established, right back to it again and again, is, in my mind, is a very strong recommendation.
Yes.
So I think you should play it. I think you'll, like, enjoy it. I know they're doing some stuff with, they're not explaining what it is yet. It sounds like next month we'll hear, but what they're calling Crisis Wars, the new multiplayer content for this game, but I don't think it's going to be just this game. They don't want to, like, you know, fraction their user base. So it sounds like maybe it's going to be like people that already own Crysis get to download it, mm-hmm. or maybe download it for a fee. They're just trying mm-hmm. to figure something out, you know, to get it to everyone. But it's basically an all new setup for multiplayer for the game. However it works remains to be seen.
Hmm.
That sounds cool. That but sounds I had cool. I had a lot of fun playing today. Good game.
Where's it at? At the
it's in the Showcase Pavilion.
Okay.
And it's amazing too that like years now. I mean, you know, remember when we first started seeing that game at E3, how it visually it was the most spectacular thing in the whole
world. By far.
Yeah. It's like you can go play it now and it's still,
yeah.
You're like, find something that looks better in this building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's this kind of game. I mean, it's mm-hmm. still like, you know, I went and I looked at a lot of stuff, you know, from Project Origin looks fantastic. I looked at Resistance 2 and it's like none of them like come close to looking as good as Crysis.
Huh.
And functioning on the level that it does where, you know, mm-hmm. like, instead of like patching indestructibility where there's like a wall that's tagged to have a piece of it disappear when it gets hit with a grenade, well, the actual building is composed of 100 different pieces and they will actually get blown apart in real time. I do need to see Red Faction. I want to go see that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Check that out, Red Faction Guerrilla.
Yeah.
That's got a bunch of destructible environment stuff.
Still a lot to see.
Tons more. And, yeah, we'll see. We're trying to get a guest to join us tomorrow.
Right,
I know,
right.
The guys from Dawn of War 2 want to stop by.
Right, we're going to try to get them in here if we can.
When we were recording, one of those calls was from N. Guy Kroll from Newsweek's Level Up. He was apologizing for missing the time. I know he wants to stop by.
Oh, so we may get him for tomorrow.
We'll have him, yeah.
No promises, kids, but yeah, there maybe an appearance by N. Guy Kroll tomorrow.
So
on GFW Radio.
Anything else?
Ryan, anything else?
Nothing.
It's late, and we got shitloads to write still.
Yeah.
Shit. All right.
Go click on things on 1UP.
Yeah. Go.
Dude, that's no joke. Just click on that shit.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
E3.1UP.com.
Right, you don't have to read it.
See sexy singles?
We don't care if you read
she
it.
She wouldn't date me. Dude, she will date you. Click that shit. She'll talk to you tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, do Sean and Ryan and Skip and me a favor. Just a personal favor, since we're here late and we're all tired.
Just click it off.
Look, just click on some shit. You don't have to read it. You don't have to like it. You don't even have to know what it's about. Click on like five of those
Actually,
blue links.
Because of the way things are work, you know how it's like whatever gets most clicks, we got to do more of?
Yeah. Oh, right.
So click on the dumbest thing you can find, actually, if we can get the clicks through the ceiling.
Wait, then we're going to have to write it, Sean.
Then, like, on Monday, though, we'll have, like, a staff meeting. And we'll be like, yeah, we need you guys to
Yeah, we need more about Kung Fu Panda coverage.
So be careful. Yeah. Well, we won't. You or I won't have to write it, so.
We won't? Okay. All right.
Ryan, do it.
Click on all the Kung Fu Panda links. All right,
Dig the podcast. Just get clicking tonight.
Keep on clicking. All right. We'll be back tomorrow.
All right.
This 1UP podcast is brought to you by G4, your way to get inside the year's biggest gaming event. G4 will be on the convention floor live every day with exclusive hands-on demos of over 30 of the biggest new gaming titles. E3-08 Live, week-long coverage, July 14th through the 18th, only on G4. Visit g4tv.com/E3 for details.